Hi, this is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and we're the hosts, and we have a special guest today, Stephen Erickson. We're sitting in Icon Gallery, and the paintings that surround us are the paintings of Stephen Erickson, and
I think we should draw the audience's attention, especially to that one.
I think that if they look a little bit to their right, they'll see it.
If you look a little bit to the right,
you'll see another one, and I think that's a very nice one too.
That's true, but this one has such a...
It's so square, though. Right. It's very square.
I think the colors are special, don't you? All right, let's get serious here. Stephen, yeah, we're going to call you Steve.
Okay,
I do that?
Sounds good.
It's too weird to call you Stephen, yeah. But it's on our, you know, it's the official art name.
That's right. Yeah.
This is, okay. He's from Iowa City and graduated his MFA degree in 1993 from the University of Iowa, and he's been a serious painter ever since. He has a day job. He's the director of the hanging of paintings at the University of Iowa Art Museum. So I had a real professional help me hang this show this time. So everyone should come down to the Icon Gallery on the square at 58 North Main and see this show. I highly recommend it. I'm totally infatuated with your work. As soon as I... the first time I saw your work was a postcard I got from Hudson River Gallery, which is the gallery that represents him in Iowa City. And immediately you were on my short list, whether you know it or not. You were up there. And then when Kathy Edwards, the curator of the University Art Museum, recommended that I show your work, that only gave me more... That gave me the push to include you in the large works show. And then we got to know each other, and I knew that you had some paintings up in Oxford, but then when I knew that it was this body of work and I got a glimpse of some of this work, I felt we had to put it in the show, in a show here. And I know that you, of course, like all the serious artists I know, want to create a new show of new work, and that's going to be your next show, but I kind of convinced Steve to go ahead and let us show this work because I love it.
Well, and I was glad to show it because it's a group of work over probably more than 10 years that never got shown all together in a nice venue.
I showed
one of them one place and one of them another, and one of them, well, I can't reference which painting it is, but but the one painting that you drew,
the one that everyone can
Wiggy
see
guy.
In the front of
that one over there. the only venue that ever had was my neighbor's apartment back in the 90s for a couple of years, other than in my own home. So it was nice to see everything together in a nice venue.
I think it looks very nice. The body of work together in this gallery, it just, I'm very happy to have your work here.
Well, I think it's also very appropriate for this particular kind of work because I know, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about this too, you were inspired by the frescoes of the Italian Renaissance, and when you go to see frescoes around Italy, they are always in a group, each having different references to some mythic theme and all of that, and I think seeing this work in a group does the same thing. You kind of take a journey when you go from one painting to the other. So. Can you talk a little bit about the relationship of, or how the frescoes have inspired you and how it's translated into these works?
That's a good question. Well, obviously there's stylistic elements that come out of this whole narrative tradition of Italian painting. The way mine referenced those types of paintings, but what's different about them is that the narratives are not so specific, or sometimes even really not really narratives at all, but they give you a clue to think about them in a narrative way, like what is the relationship of these figures, what's going on in this story, but there's never sort of one story that the thing is about. So in that way, they they use that language so you know, it gives you a clue as to how to look at them without actually telling you what they're about, which is quite different from Giotto, where you know it's the betrayal of Christ and you know what the story is, and so you come to it with that information, and then how it's different, the different way that that story might be interpreted is where you find the interesting meaning.
Well, each painting is like a poem for me, your work. It's like evocative and it's intuitive and it's touching a seed myth deep inside us. And it isn't all spelled out, and I like that. Yeah. So how did you get started on this particular body of work, and when did it start? And I don't have your artist statement that was in the front in front of me, but the way you're mixing up the dualities is where there's reference to the real world and there's reference to the mythic world, and you're sort of like, we're walking a fine line in this work between, you're creating a kind of a link or a portal to the mythic realm.
Right.
And they're great. I love what you do.
I'm not sure how I got started, other than they're a reaction to looking at a lot of art and being sort of infatuated with really Italian Renaissance art and a lot of Catholic art, even not myself being Catholic. That was kind of an interesting thing, too, because some of the things are not part of my actual, you know, like the Madonna and Child and all the things that have specific meanings to Catholics that are maybe more specific than as a Protestant I would have grown up with. So for me, I always saw the more the human story than the religious story, maybe in looking at the
There's a very interesting interpenetration between the primitive naturalism and native culture, like of the Gauguin paintings, with this Christian mysticism. Uh-huh. It's a great marriage, I think. Yeah. I mean, it's really binding heaven and earth in a beautiful way.
And that's common to almost every single one of them, that there is a notion of the spiritual energy somehow coming down and the physical energy moving up, and there's this sort of that constant play back and forth, and even, well, you can't physically reference this painting, but in a lot of paintings, even the way that color is structured, what the farthest background color in a painting is normally like a light color, like a light blue, and in some of the paintings I'll use what is a deep, heavy red to represent the very farthest background, so to sort of spatially reverse the whole structure of the painting, so that the lightest things, what you think of as the things that are the most airborne, are in the foreground, so it's almost like you're looking from a spiritual space moving toward a physical space, and then some of them are, of course, quite the opposite. And some of them also, there'll be like a sort of a loop of color, like the most physical thing, like the apple in the foreground, will be red, then it will move through a whole range of colors and end up at the same colors, so the very foreground and the very background sort of create a continuous loop.
You also were talking to me last night at the opening about the use of the apples and the oranges and all, and sometimes the oranges are actually sort of coming off the bottom of the frame, and one of them, there are just three oranges that are sitting on the ground in this landscape that's almost very surrealistic. Uh-huh. Or there's another painting that's just, you know, uses a bathroom sink. There are other everyday elements combined with these mythic elements. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I tend to use that. It's taken out of Renaissance painting. It's a sort of a device, as I understood it, at least the way I use it, is that it's a transitional device between real space and mythic space or spiritual space or whatever space the paintings are existing in. So it's meant to just move you from the room to this element that's in the painting, so you sort of step into it psychologically.
Yeah, and it works. You're doing it beautifully. I mean,
move into the next thing.
That's wonderful the way you accomplish that. Yeah.
I find myself intrigued by your distant backgrounds. That, you know, they remind me of the Mona Lisa, you know, scenario where you can totally skip the foreground if you want.
Right.
And it makes me wonder if you've done, you know, landscape paint. I mean,
very little. I'm not a very. I've done a few. I've done like. I did one as a commission once, and I've done a few on my own. It's not a very natural form for me, and I think it's because it's all so far away, and I like things to be, I like some element to be very close in the painting, something very physically present and almost life-size, and it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
It's not the natural way to do landscape, unless you would put like a giant tree right up against the frame and then do things, but...
Well, there's a lot of ambiguity in the the landscape portions of these paintings, and I guess that's really what I like. Because I'm not sure what's going on, and maybe, is that a mountain or a bush, and is that in front of that, or is it behind it?
Right.
And,
but I think it only exists, it only works because the other elements are so specific.
Yeah, right? Juxtaposed.
Whereas if that was my whole painting and it was all very ambiguous, it would be rather dull.
Maybe it makes a great little shape.
Yeah,
you know, it's I don't know if it's pasted on or if it's wall. There's a feeling of wall painting, like you've painted right on the rough.
Yeah, it looks like a fresco
wall.
There's also a feeling in all of the paintings to me of you go up to the painting and you're witnessing something that's like in progress, some kind of growth, transformation, you know, that sort of thing. And I'm fascinated by how even in your use of paint, you have that going, you know, some of them you even said were old abstract paintings that you worked over, letting the original colors come through in various ways. So I'd like to hear you talk a little bit about that too.
Well, that is part of it is that they're kind of evolved, like the abstract quality. Sometimes they do start as purely abstractions, and sometimes they start as figures and get painted over in different figures. But the there's a kind of, I've always been kind of interested in language and how you can make one element of the painting inform how you read another part, inform. So there's big chunks of these paintings that you might not notice at first are abstract or even barely referencing something, or what in the world is that plant-like biomorphic form that standing next to that woman? Like the language, the woman makes that be a plant, makes the ground become something, makes everything. So they all, I don't know how to describe it better than that, but I'm interested in the abstract and the representational and the way they inform and interplay with each other in the painting.
Well, and I like the fact that it, what you're talking about, almost in process, like it's like somebody might start painting on the wall, on their wall, and it just keeps evolving and growing, like if they could just keep going. And that you're leaving some of the some of what has gone before, the history of the thing there. In that last painting we had in the last show, where there was the lines of the abstraction that you painted it over were still left, even though they didn't like. And you might want them to refer to, say, the body underneath the garment or something, but it doesn't do that. It was like some layer, some history behind where it was now that was still coming through a little bit. I think that's kind of charming in your work.
Yeah, and it makes you feel like you're in on a secret somehow. It's like the mystery of the painting is not just there in the figures themselves, and you can't really figure out what's happening in a narrative sense, but also the texture of the painting takes you into these little places that are almost like crevices or you know, a wall that you could possibly go behind, and there's something back there, even though it's just the plane of the painting.
Yeah, I find that they seem to work unlike most paintings. They work at almost any viewing distance, from, you know, 6 or 8 inches to, you know, way off in the distance. I mean, one I'm looking at now is, what, about 5 feet square, and it would work as a postage stamp, but I can see, you know, interesting areas in it that if I were a foot away from it would still be very interesting.
Huh. Well, I always thought that that was because part of my work is a reaction to things being reproduced and that sort of dictating how things are made in the art world now, I think. Mm-hmm. And so making something that you can't really reproduce has always been part of my interest, that there should be some really small thing that when you get up to a 6-foot painting, there's some detail or level of interest that is something uh-huh. that just can't be reproduced. But of course you have to also make it work as a whole thing from 20 feet.
A lot of the textures and tonalities are pretty difficult to reproduce. I mean, it's like a print of a Rothko.
Surface quality and all those kinds of things that I think are really what, those are the subtleties that make it worth making it a painting rather than something else.
So in terms of your own process as a painter, mm-hmm. how has this body of work fed into whatever came next or whatever you're working on now?
I don't know. I spent, after the last of these in this group, spent a couple of years doing things that were much more observational. And it was partly that I was trying to get out of working so much out of my own head that my own head was producing the same series of things. So I wanted to do things that were really observational. And right now, I'm a little up in the air. The last thing I actually did is that was in Bill's last show was a little more related to this body of work.
Well, I like it when you work out of your head, I'll have to say. You got some good stuff going in there.
So I'm not sure what's coming next, but I'm in my mind, some way of like mixing this with something that has
qualities. You could actually tell the listening audience how they might be able to participate in your next.
Oh, pandemic. Yeah, no, we'll save that for later. Well, I could talk about it a little bit. I have
refer in that direction. Teaser here.
Yeah, I have this idea of sending out a questionnaire for people, and I haven't devised the question entirely yet. But it would be a question that would generate a series of responses about what kind of image people would want to see. And then I would, after getting probably hundreds of them, hopefully sort out maybe 10 that seemed significant, somehow universal, something that I could work with and generate those, that as a group of work. So that's an idea that's kind of up in the air for me right now. It's partly in response to like saying I got tired of working out of my head, so then I went to working observationally, and part of it was just that it was just my own images. Just as you move through life, it's like it just gets a little, you get a little tired of yourself and get more interested in other people, hopefully, as you move on. So,
well, and you started out from what I know of you were inspired. Maybe you could talk about, I always tend to ask people questions about how did you get started getting interested in being an artist, and I think you said that you looked at art books in your home as a child, and the interest in those people and artists sparked you. How did that happen?
My father had the Time Life series of famous artists, which was the art collection in our house, other than he collected wildlife art himself.
That's better mostly than my upbringing and exposure to art.
So that's how it, that was, you know, I was interested for whatever reason. Anybody is interested, you just think, this drawing, painting thing is kind of cool. I like doing that.
Were you particularly entranced or drawn to this particular imagery, like the early Renaissance?
No, you know, actually what I remember as a child being fascinated by was Van Gogh, because in the book, they had close-ups of the paintings where you could see the paint, mm-hmm. and the whole, and that's still like, I could never paint like him. I don't have that type of facility at all, but the whole notion of that thing that's so physical and so luminous at the same time, that it seems to embody these, what would apparently be really contradictory things, mm-hmm. that it has a brilliant luminosity, and then it has a real strong physical quality, which you think of things as being like air and earth, like they're not these these two qualities that don't naturally seem to go together. And I think that was really interesting about his work.
It's incredible. I mean, some of them, the paint is so thick that you kind of see it as things rather than as colors being blended. There's no blending going on at all. It's like glued on chunks of material.
So you started as a young boy then just to try to copy these things?
I remember copying the detail of the sower with the sunset, which is just the sun in watercolor, which is not, the opposite meaning of just very thin. But it's still that thing entranced me about his work, is that you could see how it was made, the illusion and how it was made sort of coexisted. And they were all just, both of them, way up.
That struck me too when I was a kid. I lived near the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and I remember distinctly the day that I, noticed. I think it was a Seurat, and I was walking around the room looking. I was only 4 or 5 feet away from the paintings, and most of them were huge. And I looked over my shoulder as I was leaving the room, and I saw this photographic painting of a stone arch in the ocean. And I thought, I didn't see that. Where did that come from? So I walked back to it, and as I got closer, it stopped being a stone arch and just dissolved into this, pile of little dabs of color. And I thought, wow, that is, I didn't expect that at all.
Well, you were talking about how you were attracted to the application of the paint and these close-ups of Van Gogh paintings, and one of the things that strikes me in your work here, especially that one painting of the man kind of bent on one knee, you have quite a great range of ways of applying the paint in that painting, from these fine little translucent layers to very thick sections that are almost like plaster on a wall, and or places where it looks like it's an ancient painting that has cracked over time. And so I think you actually do have a great deal of facility with different ways of applying paint.
Different from Van Gogh, but the same idea, I think. It's sort of like, I don't know, I think of it as a sort of a metaphorical use of material. That there's the notion of the thing being, it has its own being, like it almost is a wall when the wall is painted. It's not like the surface is a transparent thing that you don't see. The surface is part of the illusion. So the illusion exists as a physical sensation of the real paint, and then the thing that's beyond it somehow. Which I think is also, I'm also using that metaphorically as the transition between real space again and the spiritual space.
Well, I'm just relieved with all the installation and video and photography that you see today to see real painting. I mean, to me, it's like you're heralding again the joy of painting and these paintings, and they're everything you've described and how you approach the work and the stepping and the physicality of the material and the application of the paint and the illusion and then the play between the real and the mythic. This is the domain of the painter, and it's just so fun to have the gallery filled with these paintings.
Do you always work, since every one of these paintings has a figure, human figure in it, do you work from a model usually, or do some of these figures just kind of come out of your own imagination?
There's only a couple things that I used any kind of reference for in these. These are mostly invented.
So there's only a few minutes left. We've, poked you for questions, for answers, but is there a statement or anything you'd like to say about this body of work while we've got you that just is your...
No.
What these paintings mean for you and out in the world?
Well, let me just interject. We're talking with Steve Erickson about his paintings, which are currently on display here at the Icon Gallery.
Thanks, Alan.
I'll try and come up with a cohesive
Time's out. You don't have to answer that question.
I'm not sure I have one cohesive statement other than it is, like you're talking about the tradition of painting, and there is an intention to carry on what is a long and great tradition, I think, and to sort of bring everything in the history that I can carry with me as a painter into my work, rather than a sort of notion of it being the next thing and the next thing and being some rejection of what is the thing that came before it.
No, this carrying on this grand tradition is really alive in the room today.
And it's fantastic because there's so many artists nowadays who are obsessed with originality and, you know, that you have to do something that has never been done before in any way. And it debilitates and limits painters, I think, because, like you said, it's a whole tradition that's...
Well, and the unfortunate truth is there's only like two people every 100 years that are original in that way, right? I mean, there's a few people that really profoundly invent something like Cézanne or Picasso or, you know, some of the Renaissance artists or Velázquez. So there's people that really invent language that changes visual language, but most of us work with a tradition, so.
And yet your work is highly original within whatever traditions inspired you. Yeah.
Well, thank you again for joining us. It's been a pleasure to have you here, and it's really a pleasure to have the opportunity to show your work in Fairfield. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
And before we close, we're making a habit now of reminding our listeners that all of the previous Icon Art Radio shows are now available online, and you can stream them or download them. And you'll find them at icon-art.org. And look for the picture of Bill and Donna and myself and click on it. And you'll be glad you did.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.